The LAPD, or the Los Angeles Poverty Department, is a theater group based in LA's Skid Row. Most of its performers are homeless or live in Skid Row hotels. It was founded in 1985 by John Malpied, a former New York performance artist who was bored with the insularity of the New York art scene and was looking for something more meaningful. He moved to Los Angeles and became a legal advocate for the homeless, and then combined his advocacy work with theater. The LAPD performs sketches and improvs that reflect life on the margins of society. The group occasionally travels to other cities to take up residencies. Once there, they recruit local players from the city shelters, welfare offices, and streets. Material is developed around the lives and experiences of the newcomers. The LAPD has been in Philadelphia for the past 2 weeks and will perform this Friday at the end of their stay. I spoke with Malpied and the group's assistant director, Kevin Williams, who was formerly homeless. I asked Malpied to give us a sense of how the shows are created.
When we first started the group, everyone, because most of the people down there have had very little attention given them, you know, starting in childhood, really, you know.
Or negative attention.
Yeah, or negative attention, like they were the brunt, the family goat or whatever. You know, everyone was dying for attention, so when the group first started, everyone brought in their own manuscript and stood up and read it at the same time, you know. And everyone wanted to be the star, and everyone wanted their show to be done. You know, well, I really wasn't interested in this in the first place, you know. And so because it was really an impossible situation, we started working without scripts, and so that everybody could contribute, but no one would have authorship. And it also maintains the chaos and the jarringness of life on Skid Row. So it turns out to be a really appropriate style for the group.
Give us a really short capsule description of one of the plays you've recently done.
Jupiter 35 is about one of the group's members, Leroy Mills, who was tossed from a sixth-floor window of a Los Angeles building. And survived, and the group's participation in his reemergence into society.
He was robbed and thrown from a sixth floor window, which is a common way of dealing with people on Skid Row because it's cheap. You don't have to buy bullets or anything like that, and of course it's a suicide, you know. So, but anyway, he survived, and his face is completely restructured, and it's about his recuperation, and about the events that led up to his being tossed out the window, yeah. And then also about the group's relationship to him, because some of us played ourselves visiting him in the hospital and things like that.
You must get quite a mix of people coming down to like first performances or auditions or whatever they are in the beginning. And I'd imagine that some of the people are people who really like interested in the chance to perform, people who are homeless because they're down on their luck or because they're a victim of unemployment or whatever. But I bet you also get a lot of people who are hardened criminals or who are, you know, kind of psychopathic and you know, kind of nuts. I'm sure some people come down hoping that they can rip you off or something while they're there.
Yeah, well, we teach them a lesson in one of our shows, I have a big monologue where I admit that, yes, I am the biggest chump in America. And this is and that, yes, I have bought more crack cocaine than anyone in America without knowing it. You understand?
Without having
only,
any.
You know, only, yeah. Only because I thought I was giving people money for a sandwich and all this other stuff. You know, so at one point, because when we were in San Francisco a couple of years, what you're describing happened. And we went from having about 15 people the first day until we had one person actually in the show, and everyone else was running scams. And so the way we took out our vengeance is by including all this in the show. And so I have this big monologue about that.
Well, what did you do at the time, though, when you realized you were being scammed? Could you get rid of the people?
Well,
usually
they disappear.
Around.
After the scam, they usually disappear.
Yeah.
When they think they've played their string out as far as possible.
Or if we let them know that we're on to it.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah.
Right. But the one thing, when I started the group, it seemed to be really important that it be a very open-door policy. Because what I'd seen on Skid Row, and of course I was full of naivete at the time, was that a lot of the people who are the most in need of services aren't going to get them because it's always you can have a bed if you behave yourself. You can have a meal if you behave yourself. Well, these people they aren't going to act right. Therefore, the people that aren't going to act right are going to be out on the street. So I was interested in you know, including those people as much as possible and seeing what made them tick and having them be part of the group. But, you know, and we do have a lot of people, you know, we've had a lot of people with mental problems in the group, and we still do. I mean, probably half of the people in the group are now getting SSI, which is the federal benefit for people who can't work for mental or physical reasons. And in our cases, people in our group, it's for mental disabilities for the most part. But they've been, a lot of them have been enormous contributors to the group and have done really, really, really great work. So, having problems isn't a criteria for getting booted, nor is having talent a criteria for being included. I mean, yeah.
I was watching you work with some people from Philadelphia yesterday, and these were people who, I think there were like three homeless people from Philadelphia who'd come down to work with you during the time I was there. One of them was sleeping across three chairs in the theater part. And Kevin, what you did was to wake him up, stick him with a pin.
Well, yeah, I did. Didn't actually stick him. I threatened to. I let him see I had it.
What kind of response were you looking for?
Guess what, Junior? It doesn't play here. There's a social agencies. the first day we were here and we did our workshop and we were doing the welfare thing, we came to this point in the middle of two people's improv where the improv broke apart and the entire room joined in because everyone felt like, if you go into a welfare place, you go into a social agency, and if you tell them the truth, you won't get any help. But if you lie, and if you're just willing to sit around and bum around, you get, you know, the services, whatever services you need or want, or they'll give you. And in our group, it's like, no, it doesn't, you know, we don't want you to lie to us and go to sleep and just sit around. We want involvement. We want involvement. And get in your face involvement, you know, or get out.
You've, I'm sure, been to several skid rows and gang areas and cities across the country because, first of all, because you've traveled, and second of all, because you've traveled with the group and you go there to recruit people to perform with you. Are you struck more by the similarities or differences from city to city?
I'm beginning to be able to see some differences. The most interesting difference that I'm feeling now is the attitude of the guys we're working with. Like when we were in San Francisco, I was saying earlier we had run into a lot of scams up in San Francisco, and San Francisco is a city, you know, that is super socially conscious, and they have like program after program after program after program for homeless people and for all kinds of people. You know, it's just a very involved community. But when we were there, when this happened 2 years ago. These guys who were like really, you know, they were in shelters. They were getting three squares at Glide Memorial Church and all this.
Vultures.
But they were still, they had this attitude like, you know, who can we scam for nothing? The guys we're working with here, most of them are sleeping on the street because they don't like the city shelter system, which is, you know, really pretty bad and dangerous and ugly and so forth. They're sleeping on the street and. They're not really connected to anything or up until they got involved with us. But yet they were looking, you know, they really, no one's tried to hit any of us up for money or run any sort of scams on us whatsoever. They're interested in just
the work.
Doing this because they feel that it's going to help them, that it's fun to be with us, you know, that it's better than being out on the street, and that through us, they're getting to make other connections with people who are going to be here and be able to keep them plugged in the future.
John, where do you live now?
I live in Echo Park, which is it's a Latino neighborhood, and it's about 10 minutes by car northwest of the Skid Row area. So it's, you know, I don't have, unlike when I was living in New York, East Village, which is my training ground, I guess, for being on Skid Row, when I go home, I don't have to worry. I can walk out the door and I don't have to worry about terrible things happening to me, but when I'm downtown, I think about it.
Do you own much or have much money? And I was wondering if it must be hard to make a lot of money in the line of work that you're in. But beyond that, I was wondering if you'd feel too kind of self-conscious about it to have much, even if you did.
Well, yeah, you get sucked into the whole guilt thing. I mean, I don't I don't have a lot of money, you know, I don't have to worry about that. But still, if you have a place to stay, then, you know, then everyone I work with thinks I'm, you know, John D. Rockefeller instead of John D. Malpied, you know. So, you know, from their point of view, they think I must have all sorts of money, you know. So it is a difficult situation, and it's difficult to say no to people, you know, who are, when the need is there. But the need is overwhelming, you know, and even John D. Rockefeller could not solve all the problems that are out there, you know, nor is just throwing money at it the way to solve it, you know. But I've learned through doing too much, you know, for having too many people living at my house, for giving away too much money that was stupidly given away, stuff like that, that I have to set real limits, you know, on myself, or otherwise, you know, I'm going to go nuts, you know, and jump out the window, and I only live on the first floor, you know, so that's a big problem.
Well, I thank you both very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.